Got a light. Got a light. Welcome to the Film Threat Podcast. I am Chris Gore, joined by Anthony Ray Bench.
Hello, everyone.
This is a big show because we have a lot of movies to catch up on. We interviewed Ari Gold last week. Got a lot of great reaction out of that episode, too.
Yeah, it was a really fun episode. I got a chance to screen his movie. You haven't. The Song of Sway Lake was incredible. But we have a ton more movies to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, you can read Anthony's review on filmthreat.com. But
indeed he
let's
can.
Dive in. Before we actually talk about our films this week, a couple of really interesting plugs. For example, the Film Threat Podcast will be live at San Diego Comic-Con on Friday, July 21st at 2 p.m. at the San Diego Central Library. You'll be there, Anthony. I'll be there. A bunch of special guests from Film Threat Podcast history. I'm also doing another panel called Star Wars Dysfunctional Skywalker Family, where I actually delve into my theory that the root of all evil in the Star Wars universe is not the dark side. It's actually bad parenting. And we talk about domestic abuse near volcanoes, abandoning orphans on desert planets, and all sorts of weird stuff from Star Wars. And that panel is at the San Diego Convention Center at 7 p.m., also on Friday, July 21st, and it's room 7AB. And I am proud to announce that I will be doing the Film Threat Podcast, a very special edition of the Film Threat Podcast, at Politicon at the Pasadena Convention Center, July 29th through 30th. I don't have the exact day and time yet, but we're doing a special episode of the Film Threat Podcast called All the President's Movies. We're going to discuss...
I love this idea.
Yeah, we're going to discuss the movies that have screened at the White House, what presidents requested that these films be screened. We're going to go through every president since the White House screening room has, you know, existed. We're going to talk about all the movies that were screened there and then what those presidents may have gleaned from watching those films. What ideas may they have gotten from these Hollywood movies? So
I have a feeling our current president has watched a lot of piss porn.
No, he watched the first movie actually that Trump watched had officially screened at the White House was Finding Dory. But I'm not see just because the president or the White House requests a screening of a current film doesn't mean that the president is actually present at the screening. So I'll be doing a lot of research in preparation for this. I'm really excited. So that's if you actually go to our Twitter at Film Threat on Twitter, click on the link there and Film Threat gets a little kickback for anyone that buys tickets to the show. So So that's Politicon July 29th through 30th. And we're going to be at Comic-Con. I'm actually doing some other panels and whatnot, but if you follow me on social media, you'll learn all about that. Okay, enough with the plugs. We have so much stuff to talk about this week.
Yep.
A couple big things. One, episode 8 of Twin Peaks.
I still haven't seen it.
When you hear people talk about episode 8, the assumption is they're talking about Star Wars The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Not so in this. The greatest episode 8 I have seen is this episode of Twin Peaks, which if you've not been watching it is, I've described it as, it's Lynch, it's the master class of David Lynch. It's him using, you know, just every creative tool in his book to, I don't know if it has anything, it owes anything to the old Twin Peaks. I mean, there are characters carried from that. They're in completely different situations. There are things happening within the town of Twin Peaks. It's jumping back and forth between the past, some sort of dream world and whatnot. So, but this particular episode, which features, among other things, sort of a harrowing scene with Agent Cooper where he's shot. Interestingly, and this is sort of evil Agent Cooper on the road. Who knows where this is in the timeline, right? But he's on the road with some dirtbag and is shot. And interestingly, in the original Twin Peaks in episode 8, Agent Cooper was also shot.
Yep. That's about where I am watching.
Right. You're just at episode 8? Oh, come on, catch up. So
it's a hard show to get through.
So this happens. Then we go to Nine Inch Nails doing a performance at the Roadhouse, which first I think is fantastic from the standpoint of that Nine Inch Nails exists in the fictional universe of Twin Peaks. So it's Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails. It's fantastic. And then this haunting, clearly a digital effect, but played with this intense music and the use of sound. I think you talked about last week that David Lynch himself yeah. suggested that you wear headphones when you watch the show. The sound is impeccable. The sound design, that's something that Lynch is always focused on.
Yeah, he said something about like the perfect way to watch the new Twin Peaks is to turn off the lights, put on headphones, because like that was the mood he was going for. That like immersion into the world was what he was trying to accomplish.
But oddly, what's interesting, the first two times I tried to watch episode 8, I fell asleep.
Really?
Yeah, when it got to sort of this dream part of it, in this dream world with the giant man, I fell asleep twice. Then I went and I've watched it 6 times since. Okay, mm-hmm. Yes, I'm obsessed. Okay, but from the use of sound to all of the little clues and Easter eggs that are in it, from people have suggested that we've seen the birth of Bob, right? Because he's in it. You see his face in this little globule sphere. You also see Laura Palmer in that. And just the way it looks, this sort of black and white dream world, this little young couple in the 50s, which some people are saying is Bob's mother. She finds a penny. And it's good luck because it's facing up. And then you see this guy dressed, it almost looks like Abe Lincoln, but like all like this Abe Lincoln as a woodsman going around saying, got a light it. And then on a murderous spree, it's the most fascinating show currently that I've been watching, binge watching on television, visually, sound design. And the thing is this, here's what I believe about it. At some point it's going to start to make sense. And also it doesn't matter if it makes sense. That's what I love about it. I mean, you can read so much into it and I've read so many theories about this particular episode. I love them all. I don't think anybody's wrong. I'm not sure if anybody's right, but the experience of watching it is just so unlike anything else. And here's what I will say. So you need to check it out, but here's what I will say to the people who've got like 10 more episodes, but this is what I want to say to the people who do not like the current Twin Peaks, because it's not featuring Lucy and Agent Cooper and everyone, and they're hugging and they're meeting after so many years, and it's a reunion and there's a new wacky mystery and then there's little references.
If you thought it was going to be that, well, you're an idiot.
Or there's going to be callbacks or this. I'll tell you, if David Lynch was not involved, that's what Twin Peaks would be. Twin Peaks would be some fucking J.J. Abrams bullshit cover band of David Lynch. No shit, right? Yeah, it would be like, it's just tributes and references and winks, little winks to the camera. Fuck that shit. Fuck this franchise bullshit. Here's what I realized too, by Twin Peaks taking so many risks with what it's doing. This came to me. I want to see a Star Wars movie with characters I love, but I want them to go to places they've never been. I want them in situations we've never seen, telling a story that is unlike anything imaginable. That's what I thought, at least when the first two Star Wars movies came out. You know, Star Wars and Empire. I'm not calling it A New Hope. Fuck that. Star Wars has just been this. Every Star Wars movie now is going to include references to other Star Wars movies and little winks, and there's Snaggletooth and there's whoever. And I think it's bullshit. And Twin Peaks proves that like you can take this. I think it's genius of David Lynch to take this, you know, thing that was a mainstream hit. I mean, Twin Peaks was a phenomenon in the 90s, right? Like in the early 90s, it was huge. It changed everything. And then it just kind of petered out. And then there was the film, which wasn't particularly satisfying. And I think it was because it was so restricted by all these conventions, conventional television, conventional soap opera. And that was the thing I know that David Lynch said he hated. He did not like this sort of soap opera aspect of Twin Peaks. And none of that exists in the current incarnation on Showtime. Get the app. It's $10 a month. It's $10 a month. You'll probably have to have it for a couple months. Absolutely worth it, or buy it digitally, whatever. Twin Peaks, I'm riveted. And fuck the people who were expecting something. If you want stuff that you expect, go see a freaking Marvel movie.
I actually
like the Marvel movie, or Transformers movies. Yeah. I think the Marvel movies have, you know, while they stick to some convention. They're at least surprising. They're enjoyable. Yeah. For that type of film. Right. But Twin Peaks, I just think it's amazing that he took this thing, this mainstream thing, and said, okay, give me $50 million. I'll give you 18 episodes, 18 hours of pure, unadulterated, unfiltered, uncompromising David Lynch. And it's awesome. Episode 8. I've watched it 6 times. I know it sounds crazy. Okay. So I gotta tell you something that we got. We got a letter in the mail.
Oh, we got a letter.
We got a letter. Why don't you read where it came from and let's, oh, I have not opened this letter. So you can, if okay. you want, you open the letter and I'll tell you. So, open it up. Okay. First of all, you got to read where it's from.
Federal Correctional Institution in Texas.
Okay. Oh, open this letter. But if sure. if you want to send a letter to Film Threat, which I don't know why you would. I mean, you can just, you know, email filmthreatgore@gmail.com. Or if you want to actually send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Film Threat International Headquarters, 5042 Wilshire Boulevard, PMB 1500, Los Angeles, California, 90036. I'll return the self-addressed envelope with Film Threat stickers. How about that? And you can stick them on. You can stick them on a drink and then shoot a video of yourself with the drink and... And there you go. Okay, so what is this letter? You've opened the letter now. So yeah, we'll send you stickers. You can put them wherever you want and send us videos of yourself drinking like something with the sticker on it. What does this letter say? What does it say?
I can't read it.
You can't read it? Let me see this. First of all, it's on line paper. Hi, could you please send me some information about your competitor? Can you read that word?
No, that's what I'm saying.
And then it says Shane... Timmers or something. Shane Timkers.
Shane E. Timmons?
Yeah. Hi, could you please send me some information about your I don't even know what it says. Well, there you go. Corrections Institute. But here's what happened once. I believe it was years ago that Film Threat was listed in one of the, in some publication that somehow got in the federal correction system where our address was published, where we would just send people something free if you sent us a letter. And so to this day, I still get letters from correctional institutions.
That's hilarious.
So I don't know. That's a legit letter that came in the mail. Yeah. This is kind of crazy. Okay. All right. Well, we've got a lot of movies to talk about this week. So why don't you kick it off? Why don't you kick it off, Anthony, with your first film? Because we have so much to discuss.
Well, I figured we would start with a film that we both saw, Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Something that I've been talking about for a while because I got to see it last year.
Yeah. You saw it a year ago. Do you remember, did it change much?
A few things happened that were different. The ending was slightly altered, and the relationship between the main character, Baby, and his love interest, Debbie, was a lot more, I guess, explored. A big criticism I had during the test screening was that it's just, he meets her in a diner, and all of a sudden she's fawning over him. They're in love. He wants
to. So the relationship just happened too quick.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems organic in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's.
Well, it shows them spending time together at the laundromat. Right.
But it's pretty cliche. I mean, that's like a pretty cliche. Look, yeah. Two people meet and they like each other and blah, blah, blah. I mean.
Not all cliches are bad, though.
Right. Well, it's a fine anchor to the movie because it gives him motivation.
Yeah.
But boy, the cameo, the villain cameos in this are great. Oh my God. I love the one, I don't know the actor, but I think it was a Korean actor who has this tattoo that says, you know, it used to have a tattoo that said hate. He covered it up and it says hat.
Yeah.
And the line is, who doesn't like hats? You know, like just the little touches with every character. I mean, you know, any other director as talented as Edgar Wright is when it comes to, you know, the car chase scenes, which are unlike anything.
They're mind-blowing.
They're mind-blowing, except here's what I will say about them.
Uh-oh.
They're mind-blowing, but they're not ridiculous or stupid or unrealistic like
Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I saw an interesting Facebook post from a buddy of mine, Matt Aravello, who said, how am I going to explain to my son that they made 8 Fast and the Furious movies? And he's got like a 2-year-old son, you know? So, but yeah, I think that Fast and the Furious movies are stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know that there are particularly many layers. I think all the characters are surface level. Mm-hmm. It's about family. And the car chases are just over the top, ridiculous, and could only be achieved with digital effects.
Yeah, Michael Bay explosion fest.
Yeah, exactly. Just it's stupid and insulting to my intelligence. So I don't like the Fast and the Furious movies. The only one I actually liked was the Tokyo Drift one. Which is
the one that everybody hates. It's the one that everybody hates. I've only seen one. I saw the one that came out recently.
It doesn't really feature many of the main characters from the original.
Yeah.
And it, or from the other films. It's sort of a departure, and it's the most realistic car chases. So I don't know. I just liked that one. It was different because it's not set in America, and it almost felt like a foreign film. And it was more realistic. And I saw that movie at a drive-in, so I thought that actually added to the experience.
Atmosphere is great.
But Baby Driver, I thought from the character. See, this is the thing that the Fast and Furious movies for me just don't work is the characters, and I think that worked so well. You saw the motivation for Baby. You see, you know, some sort of flashbacks to setting certain things up. The John Hamm is unhinged in this.
Oh, I love John Hamm. He's him as they're comparing him with Baby, because Baby is this kid that's in the crime world, doesn't want to be a criminal. John Hamm has kind of embraced all the aspects of it, and they kind of play off of each other in a really interesting way.
No, it works. I mean, it almost gets like by the end too, it gets just so. What I like about it is that you just see that there are consequences. If you live this kind of life, there will be consequences. And it's interesting because I saw it at the Arclight, which, man, I don't know. I think the Arclight and I need to have a talk, or maybe we need to have a separation. My last few experiences there have not been the best. It's for just a number of reasons. But I think I'm not going to go into that. It's just, there's always been just a weird experience going to the Arclight in Hollywood. I think it's just sort of attracting a crowd that's more hipster and not so much the cinephiles.
Mm.
You know, the cinephiles are my people. The nerds are my people. And I feel like it's just now turned into cool to see a movie there. And I don't, that's not my scene. But okay. But they do this thing called the Arclight Stories, where they have like a little, it's almost like a DVD behind the scenes right at the very end.
I love those.
I like those. So they turn out really well. So it gives you a little insight, and you've already seen the movie, so it's not going to ruin anything. But and Edgar Wright talks about how he loved the old Warner Brothers gangster movies from like the 70s. And that, you know, if you live that life, there are consequences and bad things will happen. And that's, and we see proof of that in this. I mean, it doesn't end the way you think it's going to end. So,
and thank God.
You think God. Yeah. Well, I mean, and also Edgar Wright, I mean, I was talking to a buddy of mine, Tarantino and Edgar Wright, in my opinion, never made a bad movie. They've made movies I've liked better than other movies.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
They've made movies where it's like, oh, I like this one better than that one. But look at Tarantino's career. Look at Edgar Wright's career. I mean, these guys are batting 1,000, you know, every time they get up to bat. And I'm just, I don't know why I made a baseball reference. This is a movie podcast. Season. Why are you making baseball references, Chris? Said someone.
Yeah, Chris.
Yelling back at the listening of this podcast. But I don't know. Like, those two directors are solid. You know, when you look at their body of work, and they don't make movies all that often. You know, it's like, it's not like Tarantino's making a movie every year, or Edgar Wright's like got this like consistent output, right? It's these guys, they make a movie. It's something they care about. And I didn't realize that Baby Driver was something that he'd worked on for like over a decade. He's had this like idea for this movie. It might be longer, like, cause I saw him tweeting about it. Baby Driver, just from the action to the character to play. Oh, and the music.
Oh, the music's fantastic. I actually bought the soundtrack. It was expensive. It was like $22. But
wait, do you have the CD?
I have the CD.
Can I?
The sound? I have it on iTunes.
You don't have the CD? I could borrow. I just want to put it in my iTunes.
Okay. Yeah.
Can I do that? Okay. Great. Thanks, man. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. It's do you have it in your car? Soundtrack. Yeah.
Okay. We're gonna do that before you leave.
Okay.
Thanks. The music, what's great about it is you pointed this out in your review that just like so many of the sequences are cut to the beat of the music.
Yeah.
And the opening title sequence if you're not smiling till it hurts from watching that sequence, it's almost like part dance number, part like ballet with cars. It's incredible. So
there's little touches too, and you only pick it up during like your second viewing. When they're playing the music, they go to a coffee shop and the characters are literally stirring to the time of the beat.
Right, right.
It's just the little nuances, the little details that Edgar Wright is perfect at implementing.
So you got to see Baby Driver. Yeah,
definitely. Okay, hands down. Cool.
All right, I've got a couple movies that I think I need to talk about.
Please share.
I have a couple. I've seen a bunch of documentaries lately. I've been catching up on documentaries. So there's a whole bunch. I'm going to talk about these kind of in rapid fire. So let me just sort of like plow through. Well, let me plow through a couple of these. Zero Days, which I happen to catch, which is an Alex Gibney documentary about the Stuxnet virus. Do you know about this?
No.
So Stuxnet is this viral worm that the damage it kind of does to your computer. First of all, it basically was created to attack the Iran nuclear program. So it was created by the United States.
Oh, wow.
To attack Iran's nuclear program. And it got in as a worm into their computers at the nuclear plant. And they imply, through some of the people that they interview in this documentary, it's basically this documentary is filled with interviews with people who don't want to be on camera. In fact, it's interesting. The person who narrates most of it is actually a digital effect. They hired an actress, which they turned into a digital effect, to basically read the testimony of someone who explains what happened and sort of sets the record straight about Stuxnet. Mm. This is the future of warfare. This affected our election, and Stuxnet was kind of the first volley in what will be, I believe, the next world war is going to be fought on computers. And the damage that Stuxnet can do, not only can it give wrong information. So what it did was is it changed settings on centrifuges over in Iran and then gave incorrect data to the technicians who were monitoring it. And then when they tried to solve the problem, it just made things worse. And that was all done by people in the United States who were controlling it, who created the Stuxnet virus. Here's the problem. That virus actually made it out of Iran. And it spread to other computers and other systems around the world. It's frightening. It's one of those things where it's like, I wish I hadn't seen the documentary because now it's really scary.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened in the election was, all right, whatever. I think American democracy is going to win out in the long run. Okay. But it's pretty incredible what is described in this documentary that basically a foreign entity could get into our systems here in the US, shut down the power grid, shut down, you know, airports, shut down. I mean, how are planes supposed to land without their, I mean, what would happen if we had no power for weeks, months? You know, you're talking about, you know, hospitals, people would die. I mean, it's, you know, traffic lights. How is traffic supposed to run without power? This is the
traffic barely runs with
traffic,
power.
Yeah, if you live in LA, it's pretty much Mad Max Fury Road, anyways. but this documentary will scare the shit out of you. It reminds me of this documentary I saw when I was in high school about Nostradamus, where I was so depressed. I'm like, all right, what's the point? What's the point? Nostradamus just predicted the end of the world. Look into it later. But this Alex Gibney doc is incredible. Check it out. Just so that you, I don't know, just to scare the crap out of yourself.
Where can we find it?
It's on the Showtime app.
Oh, okay.
I needed a break from watching episode 8 of Twin Peaks. I couldn't watch it 9 times in a row. 9 times. Okay. And then another documentary I saw, which is actually just recently premiered on Netflix, is American Anarchist. Which, okay, it's about the Anarchist Cookbook. Have you ever heard of this book?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the Anarchist Cookbook is, I remember this, it was always in every sort of, like, you know, alternative bookstore in Michigan when I was a kid in high school. It's the Anarchist Cookbook, man. It's how to make bombs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I had a book that was similar. It wasn't quite as evil. It was called How to Get Even. And this book, oh, my God, this book was so good. This is a quick divert, but this book was so good, this How to Get Even. It would explain like just how to like, it wasn't anything that would hurt anyone like physically. There wasn't anything in this book about like making bombs, but it was all about doing things like setting up a blind date with someone and then sending them somewhere weird, sending two different people to a blind date and they think they're supposed to meet each other. So you mess with them.
So it's basically like how to do petty shit.
Petty stuff basically to get revenge on people. Or like what you do is you put in a particular type of car You put an ad in the paper, an ad on you put an ad somewhere advertising a vehicle for very inexpensive price, but you say, I work weird hours, so please only call me between the hours of midnight and 6 a.m. So then the person is getting all these phone calls for some car for really cheap price, for really weird hours being woken up. The other thing I remember from that book is it had a recipe for a thing they called a chicken bomb.
I can only imagine.
Okay, so you take a mason jar, yeah, fill it with raw, uncooked chicken.
Okay,
right?
This is way different than what I thought.
Yeah. It's actual chicken. Yeah. Then you put milk, you fill it with milk, and then you add a little bit of yeast, just a little tablespoon, just yeast into it. Then you seal the mason jar as one is supposed to, right? Mm. You seal a mason jar, and then you hide it somewhere. You'd either hide it in someone's house, maybe in the trunk of their car, or you know, just somewhere you hide it, right? Wait a week, the yeast will expand and the chicken will and milk will rot and explode the chicken bomb. If it explodes in someone's car or someone's house, say their basement, the smell of rot is so bad, it's so stinky they cannot get it out. If it explodes in their car, they're not going to be able to get the smell out of the carpet or whatever. So these are the things that stood out. So, okay, yes, I didn't buy the Anarchist Cookbook, but I did buy the How to Get Even book because I thought it was funny. So this documentary on Netflix called American Anarchist is about this guy named William Powell, who wrote the Anarchist Cookbook when he was 19 years old. And he talks, you know, they sort of go through the history of the Anarchist Cookbook. They show videos on YouTube of people using recipes from it and potentially injuring themselves. It's theorized that certain extremist organizations have used the recipes in the Anarchist Cookbook for evil means. Well, they catch up with William Powell years later. He's now grown up. He's an adult. He's teaching. He teaches students overseas. He's trying to do good. And he reads a statement where he disavows the book. Mm. It's a really fascinating documentary. If you've ever heard of the Anarchist Cookbook, and he feels all this remorse. You meet him and his wife and they go through, he just didn't realize like what he unleashed on the world with this. It's such a simple concept. And he even talks about how like the publisher at the time kind of goading him into stuff that they're like, someone showed up at a press conference where, he's talking about the Anarchist Cookbook. And then someone threw like a smoke bomb, but the publisher didn't duck. And his secretary didn't duck because they kind of knew it was going to happen. Mm. But that got all this publicity because someone was there and tried to do something bad. So really interesting doc. It's mostly an interview with this guy and archival footage, and quite enjoyed it. And then I tried to watch one other document. See, look, I can't always get to the theater with this stuff. I tried to watch Casting JonBenet, which I know won accolades at Sundance, the recent Sundance. I was not blown away. I mean, and it sort of like put me down this rabbit hole of watching videos. I watched the CBS series, 2-part series about JonBenet, where they had criminal investigators look at the evidence and try to come up with other theories and look at it with a set of fresh eyes.
Yeah.
And they came up with a theory that it might have been JonBenet's older brother, which is still in question. Right. But this Casting JonBenet, what they did was, is they had this sort of cheesy script for a JonBenet movie, and they tried to cast the parts with locals who live in Boulder, Colorado. And then each of them talks about how they, you know, their memory of JonBenet. And a lot of them are like theater actors who are thinking that being in this is their big break. So they're overacting. So it's like, I hate to say this, it's a lot of bad actors trying out for this part, but there's no real movie. It's just the documentarian. And I only know this because I only watched the first 30 minutes of it. I just got like, I would rather see a documentary about the case.
Yeah.
You know, to me, those recreations are kind of, I just associate that with just sort of cheesy television, you know?
Yeah,
sort
like
of,
Lifetime movies.
Like Lifetime movie or whatever. It's like, I don't want to see that. It's like, when you see a lot of those things that are based on real stories, show me the real story.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those things you look at and you go, well, I'd rather see a documentary about this than the dramatization. So my opinion on Casting JonBenet cannot be taken seriously because I only watched the first 30 minutes. If anyone else listening to this podcast.
And you don't recommend the first 30 minutes.
I don't know. Like, I felt like it was a wrong approach. And I felt like they were exploiting these actors who thought they were going to be in a movie, that they were, the acting was bad. So it's almost like they're kind of mocking local actors. Mm. And really kind of exploiting JonBenet. I don't know. Like, I really did not like it. I mean, and I just like was, I just like, the only time I ever like turned off a couple movies like this is like when I've been like working at a film festival and you reach that point where you're just like, this is not better than other movies I have seen that I could compare it to. I don't know how much longer I can watch this. Mm. So on rare occasion, I will turn off a film, and this was one of those. So there you go. There's my rant. A couple of recommends, highly recommend 0 Days, American Anarchist, worth checking out, casting JonBenet. Let me know if it gets better after 30 minutes. I did not like it. What else have you seen?
I saw Transformers 5.
You actually went to see it?
Yeah.
No.
My girlfriend, it was her birthday last week, and she wanted to see it because she's seen all the other ones, and she loves dinosaurs. The Dinobots were only in it for a minute.
Right.
Dear God, I was struggling with like writing out like a synopsis, and I can't remember a single thing from the movie aside from me sitting there with my arms crossed and just going, God, this sucks. God, this sucks. We could have saw Baby Driver. Why am I here? Why am I here?
Well, it's gotten across the board panned.
Yeah.
And it's also box office wise has not done well.
No.
But Matt Kyle,
yeah.
Who is Matt Kyle, by the way, was the Transformers expert on Attack of the Show, who was unbeaten.
Yeah.
When he was on Attack of the Show, they'd bring on Matt Kyle. So he wrote this. I mean, it's more than a review. It's sort of this analysis and dissertation of every Transformers movie. He gets into Transformers lore and whatnot from the cartoons and the books and just other comic books. So he's really well informed on this stuff. And he ripped it apart.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend Megan, we played a game where we'd count how many seconds a particular shot would go on for. The highest we got was 11 seconds. The editing in this movie has severe ADHD. It is ridiculous. The acting, I mean, Mark Wahlberg is back as the lead character. Cade Yeager, I think his name is.
But is it weird? I saw one of the trailers for it, and there's like a football field, and everything's destroyed. Like, this seems really dark. Like,
it's not, though. Every single one of the trailers has that, where it's dark.
Okay, well, just here's the mm-hmm. whole thing. Because I've seen, the only Transformers movie I mildly liked was the first one.
Yeah.
And okay. It's sort of Spielbergian, sort of old school Spielberg, like a boy in his car instead of a boy and his dog. Yeah. Like, and I like the first Transformers, okay? All the other ones have sucked. All the other ones, in my opinion, have just been god-awful. And what I keep thinking is, these Transformers are supposed to be heroes, but the amount of collateral damage that occurs, they're not, it's something that at least I think about it. I always think about this. I know I've been ripped apart for criticizing Man of Steel for the collateral damage, but I don't know, that's something that just, I think about, like, how are they heroes when clearly thousands of people are dying just, you know, with all that's occurring, and billions, potentially trillions of dollars of damage to certain parts of the world. I mean, the world is totally screwed up in this movie, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this to your point, at least from what I was told about the fourth one, cause I fell asleep during like the first like 20 minutes of the fourth one. They do address that whole collateral damage thing, where they outlaw the Autobots, they outlaw all Transformers, and basically hunt them down and kill them. That happens a little bit in this movie, so it is addressed. It's just...
why don't they just leave and go to another planet? Do they need to breathe air?
No.
Just go somewhere else.
They just like hanging out, I guess. Bad movie.
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I feel like the world building is something that just... that Michael Bay just went off the rails after the first film.
They have like 14 Transformers movies on the pipes. Like, that's what they're planning out. 14 movies, spinoffs. They're making a cinematic universe with the Hasbro company with like Mask and Micronauts and stuff like that. Just Stop.
Boo. Although stop. I will say, Micronauts is something I did collect as a kid, and I read the Marvel comics of Micronauts with Baron Karza and Space
Nerd.
Yeah, and a Croyer and the Croyer's horse. I forget the name of the horse, but someone listening to this knows the names of the Micronauts and the Time Travelers. I love those toys as a kid. They were not like Legos. They were kind of, because you could interchange some of the parts of the Micronauts. So every time you bought one, you could kind of mix and match them to kind of create your own, which was a lot of fun. So yes, the new Transformers movie is terrible. What a shock. Oh, yeah. I never would have guessed.
Anthony Hopkins literally calls Mark Wahlberg dude in the movie.
He does. What's so funny
is
it's weird. If you look at photos, if you search Google Images for photos from the new Transformers movies, mm-hmm. there are no photos of Anthony Hopkins. Unless you do a screen grab from the trailer. And I almost think that some of these actors, when they appear, I didn't even know John Turturro was in it.
Yeah.
But I feel like when some of these actors appear in the Transformers movies, they're like, yeah, you can't use my likeness in the marketing of the film. Yeah, I'm
only here because my grandson's
likeness. I need a paycheck. Yeah. Could we just not use me in any of the marketing of the film whatsoever?
And kill my character off.
Yeah, could my character die?
No sequels.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
So, all right. Well, look, no surprise that that's awful, but I'll tell you this. I saw another great Netflix movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's the thing. I feel the theater this year for the summer movies has been actually kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
It's been pretty disappointing, with the exception of Guardians Volume 2 and Baby Driver. Everything has just been or downright awful. Wonder Woman, though. Actually, Wonder Woman.
The first two-thirds. Yeah.
Yeah, the first two-thirds. That final third is just, the more I think about it, it's just garbage.
Yeah,
I'm glad that Wonder Woman now has surpassed. It's the most profitable film of all the DC Extended mm-hmm. Universe movies, the DCEU.
That's right? Cool. Actually, Transformers 5 was paired up with Wonder Woman, and we left right after the No Man's Land.
Oh, you did?
Scene.
That's the highlight of the film, is the No Man's Land.
That's it. Everything after that is just kind of
Everything after that is, after they take that photo that it ends up appearing in.
That's exactly when we left.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. So you saw it at the drive-in?
Yeah, yeah.
Which drive-in?
Mission Tiki.
I love the Mission Tiki. Yeah. There's also, see, the one drag about the Mission Tiki, okay, this is the Mission Tiki drive-in in, where is it? It's
God, I don't know.
City of Industry. City of Industry also, I think, is where the Pacific Vineland is. They're both in the same kind of area. Pacific Vineland Theater, which has four screens, you can switch screens. So you could see three movies in one night. You could see three movies in one night if you plan it out. Because it's usually dusk, 8 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and midnight, they play a movie. I'd usually bring pizza and a cooler filled with beer and just sit there, and I'd set up my little sports chairs, right? And then just sit there and watch a movie. It's so fun.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. All right. See, now I want to go to the drive-in now. You convinced me.
Yeah, just don't see Transformers.
Yeah, I'm not going to see Transformers. But see, the Mission Tiki, the way that they do it, they give you a ticket and they block it off. So it's sort of like this weird, you can't get to another theater. Once you go down a certain lane, you're kind of stuck in there.
And it's always it's never...
Don't buy popcorn.
Two good movies. It's always a good movie and then a movie you either don't really want to see, or a movie that you have slight passing interest in.
Yeah, they do pair them differently.
Yeah, it's never two good movies.
But if you live in Southern California, those drive-ins, Pacific Vineland and Mission Tiki, are great. Highly recommend them. We should do a Film Threat night at the drive-in.
We should.
Why don't we do...
Dude, you know what?
All right, we'll record a Film Threat podcast at the drive-in.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, we're going to do it. Later this summer, it's happening. But I have to tell you about another movie. And because... movies have been, in my opinion, kind of disappointing. I've seen three decent films this summer season. I saw another Netflix movie. I know. But people are talking about it, okay? War Machine with Brad Pitt, okay? And people are talking about this movie for a couple of reasons. One, it's about General Glenn McMahon, who was tasked by President Obama with going to Afghanistan to kind of clean things up, right? And he kept, you know, and you really kind of see at least the story that the film tells. I mean, it's a narrative feature that really the Afghanis, no surprise, don't want us there.
No,
the culture is just so different. There's a great line in it too, because they have this the president, they have this election, right? They want to like have elections in Afghanistan just to, and of course the election, you know, it's totally corrupt. Like 500 people live in a particular district and 10,000 people vote for the current president. And they say that the people are like, why do we need to vote? The president's, he's in good health. There's no need to vote. Why are we voting? The president looks like he's fine. We don't need to. It's just interesting because it really points up the cultural differences. Americans trying to like put their values on a nation that just wants nothing to do with us. And that's a thread within it, but it really is a character study that Brad Pitt, masterful. I mean, if he could be nominated for an Oscar for doing this, it's I think at least that I can recall, the first performance I've seen this year where I would say Oscar nominated right there, Brad Pitt, for War Machine. It's on Netflix. It's everything about it, from the music to the opening scene to the way Brad Pitt acts. First of all, the one thing sometimes like Brad Pitt, he's kind of like he's Brad Pitt in certain movies. He kind of just acts like Brad Pitt. In this movie, he went all out with like, he changed his look. He walks different. He stands different. He has this weird thing he does with his hands. They're always kind of bent, like he's holding a gun. And that's something about this guy, General Glenn McMahon. He was a character, and he actually, if you look up the history of this guy, he really pissed off a lot of people at the White House because he was speaking out of turn. I mean, he was talking to like, they did a story about him in Rolling Stone magazine and it just blew up in his face. So he was this general who kind of was seeking publicity to help his cause in Afghanistan. And it didn't work out. It's not the right way to go about that. Right. So in any case, at least from what I read about it, cause I did read about him online. The movie is historically accurate, but really it's Brad Pitt's performance that makes the whole thing. He talks strange. He's got this like, oh my God. And here's the funny thing about this film too. When you look at it, Anthony Michael Hall is in it. There's
nice.
There's all these other cameos. I won't give away anymore. There's a ton of cameos by people who were big in the 80s, like in teen movies. And it just kept coming up. I'm watching going, oh, that's, and you'll see. So see if you can pick him out. But Anthony Michael Hall, I mean, he's the dead giveaway. And Anthony Michael Hall, what's so funny is he's so physically different than, he was this gangly, skinny kid in Breakfast Club. And what else is in 16 Candles, among others?
Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah. Well, Edward Scissorhands, that's where he starts to become the jock, right? Yeah. But like in this movie, he's like this buff badass. I mean, he's just, you know, he's like a meathead. But I'm telling you, cannot recommend War Machine enough. Flip on your Netflix and look up that. And then also the American Anarchist, documentary that I mentioned earlier. What else? Cool. What else do you have, Anthony? Because this is a catch up episode because we have so many movies. We haven't done a traditional episode of the Film Threat podcast in a while. So,
no, we haven't.
So we got to catch up. So what else have you seen?
Next up is Stella Polaris. It's a very boring movie about the ice caps melting in Greenland.
Now, why is it boring?
It's boring because...
Is this a movie? You saw it on a screener. See, I think you probably should have seen that at the theater. Okay. It played at the recent Los Angeles Film Festival.
Then it might have been visually stimulating, but it commits that sin.
What's boring about it?
It commits that sin where they show the subtitles...
Right.
On a white background, so it's really hard to read.
The subtitles against white? That's like a rookie move.
Exactly. Exactly. They introduce characters. It's a documentary. They introduce characters. They don't tell us who they are. It's just talking heads the entire movie. And then it goes into like probably, I think, like a 20 to 25 minute just montage of watching ice melt. You literally watch ice melt for 25 minutes. It's beautiful scenery. It's a gorgeous movie, but there's no substance to it.
It's a short or a feature?
It's a feature. It's a feature. It's way too long.
So it's like watching paint dry?
Pretty much. But I mean,
is there scientific evidence, or is it just meant to, is it almost like a nature film?
It would have made a great National Geographic film if they would have put like credible scientists talking about, you know, global warming and stuff like that. They show people and people do narrations. I don't know who these people are. There isn't a tag telling me like, oh, this is a scientist. This is a, you know, a climate expert. Nothing. And they just talk. And it's not, you know, it's in a different language, which I don't mind. But if I can't read the subtitles, then it's poor filmmaking. It's just boring, monotonous stuff. I wouldn't recommend.
What is there anything that you got from? What is it like watching a screensaver? Although
yes, that's exactly what it is. I think I mentioned that in my review.
Yeah. I mean, there are some screensavers. Yeah. I kind of liked on my computer.
Yeah.
I don't really use screensavers anymore.
It would make a good screensaver if you just mute it. It would. It promotes climate awareness, and I'm all on board with that. But I just think there could have been.
I'm aware.
Yeah.
We can't do anything about it. Our politicians are idiots. We can't do anything. We're fighting over this thing that it's an empirical truth that just some people have not accepted. Right? Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like the evidence is here. What, you know, I mean, they've estimated that like what, by the year 2100, there'll be no Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, just because of the way that the water is rising, Florida, you know, you're not going to be able to, you should not buy property in Florida right now.
Yeah. This movie specifically focuses on the climate and how it's affecting Greenland, which from what I learned in The Mighty Ducks Part 2, Greenland is full of ice and Iceland is very nice.
Well, there you are. But I mean, I do love when I hear people like Bill Nye, the science guy, or Neil deGrasse Tyson, when they talk about it, because I feel like the two of them are really good at communicating things that are scientific in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Neil deGrasse Tyson, I love him whenever he appears on Bill Maher, or just, you know, when he'll live tweet a movie, I recall that he live tweeted Interstellar, which I thought was really, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
You know, like, but he'll talk about scientific inaccuracies and things that he liked about it. I love that. I love when a real scientist chimes in. So,
and they're recognizable outside of their field.
Right. I mean, you know, yeah, but they're also, they don't back down. Bill Nye, man, no, like he's, no. I love that when you see he'll debate, you know, a creationist. You know, I love stuff like, I love when they put on events like that, or just Neil deGrasse Tyson. I mean, I love the Cosmos series which was on Fox, produced by Seth MacFarlane.
Did not know that.
Yeah, no, it's, well, I believe also that's one of those shows you can download it somewhere using an app that you should get. And you should definitely get the Showtime app to get to watch Twin Peaks episode 8. Without question, you should be doing that. So, we got a lot more movies to talk about here. I don't know that we're going to get to them. We're not going to get to them all in this episode. You have to listen to next week's episode to get more of these films. But what, do you have anything else we can end on?
No. I think we're good.
You think we're good?
I think we're good.
Okay, good. All right. Well, I want to thank you for listening to the show. I am Chris Gore, also at That Chris Gore on Twitter and Instagram and everything. And Anthony,
you can find me on Twitter at This Game Cheats.
And Film Threat is Film Threat on Twitter and Instagram. Visit filmthreat.com. It's updated daily with reviews. This podcast comes out every week. Sometimes it comes out on Wednesday, and then sometimes it'll come out on Thursday. But it definitely...
Usually Thursday.
Occasionally on a Friday. It just depends on exactly what we're doing. So, but also want to remind you, the Film Threat Podcast live Friday, July 21st at San Diego Comic-Con at 2 p.m. at the San Diego Central Library. And in addition, another panel that I'll be doing, Star Wars Dysfunctional Family, 7 p.m. also Friday, July 21st, 7 p.m. at the San Diego Convention Center. Thank you for listening. Hey, and also I want to ask you one more thing. If you're still listening to this, write a good review of the podcast. If you write a review on iTunes and you rate us, or subscribe on SoundCloud, subscribe on iTunes, write a review. If you write a decent review of Film Threat on iTunes and rate us high, it bumps us up in the rankings and more people will have an opportunity to discover the world's greatest movie podcast. And one day we'll actually live up to that. I'm not sure it's today. It's probably not today. I'm thinking it's definitely not today. But one day we will be the world's greatest movie podcast. And on that note, let's get out of here.